Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, in Europe, 9 countries, including the biggest donors, have slashed their foreign aid, and it's created a void. And when President Donald Trump took office in January, he significantly reduced and all but eliminated global health funding and cooperation when he returned to the White House. And I, for one, believe that they have no one to blame but themselves. But I'd like to find out from others as to what they're thinking. Max Primorac, Senior Research Fellow at the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage, joins us. Max, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel. Thanks for having me.
So public health officials around the world are concerned that this funding formula that's been had, that a number of countries, the U.S., 9 other major donors, all but almost eliminating the funding and finance for these organizations. And surprisingly, the WHO is saying this may be a good thing for us, that we can think out of the box and do other things. And maybe we're not so reliant on these countries, but there seems to be a lot of mixed messaging going around. Your thoughts?
Well, what's happened is that the president made sure that we would no longer waste billions of dollars on programs where only 40% was going to help people, especially in Africa. And the other 60% basically never left Washington, D.C. and financed a very wealthy, a very politically powerful and very left-wing foreign aid industrial complex. So that's over. And we're going to work directly with countries. We're not going to work through these very left-wing and expensive middlemen like UN agencies or international NGOs and contractors. Work directly with the countries themselves and help them take ownership of these programs, and that means co-financing.
You know, what's kind of interesting is the head of the WHO seems to talk out of both sides of his mouth, right? He says that this is maybe a good thing because they're not going to be under the direct influence of these very large donors. But in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of COVID, he was very much influenced by some, just not the United States.
That is correct. He basically did a cover-up of Communist China's role in exporting the COVID virus and failing to provide the very important necessary technical information that we needed in order to identify what this disease was and to prevent it from killing the millions of people that it did. So this individual, and let's not forget, I know his background. He's from Ethiopia. He's a Marxist, and the Communist Chinese actually helped put him in charge of the World Health Organization. They failed the United States. They failed the world. And so it's no surprise, and kudos to the president for cutting off aid, but more importantly, exposing the fact that these global institutions, especially these UN institutions, really work against the interests of the United States at the same time that we've been financing them, taking us for idiots.
The other thing that's kind of interesting is when we talk about wasteful spending, one, this organization decides to locate itself in Geneva, and two, they have repeatedly beat back efforts to conduct an audit of the WHO. You know, the old adage, where there's smoke, there may be fire?
Oh, absolutely. There are quite a variety of international organizations that have received billions of dollars from the United States over the years. And it's not just the World Health Organization. There are others, for instance, our $130 billion global HIV/AIDS program, which did save a lot of lives. But, you know, when these kind of government programs go on, they never disappear. There's the inertia of getting more and more money. And as a result, corruption ensues. Wasted spending. You know, I was in Africa about this time of year in two different countries, stayed at nice hotels, and every single one of their conference rooms was taken up by one of our partners to promote global health, basically spending millions and millions of dollars on programs that did nothing to help these countries, did nothing to prevent these diseases from escaping these countries and protecting us. I've served in government. And what you will hear often is get your burn rate up. And that means make sure you're spending as much money as possible every month so that you use up all the money. No one in government ever gets promoted from saving money. Actually, you get punished. And this is the same thing with these international organizations.
This complex that you talk about, you know, this foreign aid industrial complex, I read a series of investigative reports, and it really just kind of blew my mind, that folks entered this industry like right out of college. And 40 and 50 years later, they're still traveling around the world saying the same thing that they were saying when they started right out of college. The messaging hadn't even hardly changed at all. It was like they earned an incredible living off of this complex, and the messaging never changed. Nothing seemed to progress. And in fact, the problems that they were addressing were worse than they were when they started.
Yeah, it's become a career. Many of these universities have specific programs to train people how to do foreign aid around the world. And once they get in, there's no incentive to work yourself out of a job. And it's not like the private sector. If you fail to achieve the goals that you put forward, you know, the market simply stops financing you and you get shut down and you disappear. Not so the U.S. government. It's about having the kind of lobby in Washington, D.C. to be able to convince members of Congress to keep pushing money in. So if you have a very powerful lobby, which this multi-billion dollar industry has, irrespective of whether or not you achieve the goals that you've set out, doesn't matter. It's about continuing the money. And they've taken advantage of the fact that many are unable to really know what's going on the field. And they come out with the threat that if you don't give us the money, millions will die. Well, you know, we're now in October. It's been, 10 months since the administration came in and froze aid. And that's not happening. And as you said, now you're having, and, you know, I really don't care what the WHO has to say, but I do care what other countries and the leaders of these countries have to say. And they have admitted that this is the best thing that could happen for them. They got stuck into this aid dependency. International welfare, whether it's at home or abroad, simply doesn't work. And that now they've got to take ownership of helping their own citizens. And that begins with co-financing. And that's the path that this White House is taking the program. So I think people don't have to be worried that things like Ebola and other diseases get out. I myself in the last Trump administration had to deal with Ebola outbreaks. Those programs, those important programs to keep Americans safe will continue, but the waste, fraud, and abuse does not.
You know, what's interesting is that we always seem to find a way to be leaner and meaner when, you know, these revenue streams are altered, and they're able to do it in a very quick fashion, which indicates to me as a former CFO that we have a lot of bloat in this organization. They knew it all along, but they weren't willing to consume political capital in order to address it. In fact, the loudest detractors of all of what's going on are the very employees that have made this their lifestyle, and I call it a lifestyle because I truly believe that's what it is, for all these years. They're sad to see this go because they may be on the chopping block.
Oh, absolutely. And you're seeing, you know, I cover this and track what's happening, and large numbers of people are being let go. Programs are being cut. But another thing that was also nefarious and did America a lot of harm was that foreign aid had been misused during the Biden administration and before that during the two Obama administrations as a global platform to export their woke ideology. So you have very traditional conservative societies, especially places like Latin America and Africa, the Middle East, that were getting our help. But tied to that help was an effort to push the LGBTQ and queer ideologies, transgender ideologies. And it created a lot of antagonism, a lot of anger. I can't tell you how many African officials I had met with during the Biden administration that looked at me askance and said, you know, the communist Chinese don't force us to deny our own religious faith in order to work with you. Why are you doing this to us? So this had dramatic national security consequences. And in the end, many of these countries that were the top recipients were working with communist China anyway. So a lot of the folks in the industry claim that, oh, we're going to lose our soft power. But in fact, we were playing idiot. These countries were receiving billions of dollars from American taxpayer. Meanwhile, they were aligned with communist China on a whole bunch of issues.
Yeah, I mean, and that was a risk that they decided to take, right? Because I think it's fairly easy to be apolitical. But they were actually taking stands on political issues that they didn't need to involve themselves in my view. Your thoughts?
Well, there's a lot of institutional capture, and the progressives have been very effective at it. We've seen it in culture. We've seen it in movies, the media. And here in Washington, D.C., I'd say 95% of the votes go to the left. In the global health industry, when you look at Federal Election Commission records, because every time we make a political donation, it becomes public information. So we track those. 98% of the political donations coming from this industry went to the progressives in political campaigns. So in many respects, there was a lot of money laundering of taxpayer money to support the campaigns of these individuals. So it just kept on going and going. The politicians were providing them more money. That money was then misused to support an army of supporters during election time. But with this president, that's gone. Those days are gone.
Yeah. Did you find that they kind of believed that they were the center of the universe and they were, it seemed to me they were perfectly comfortable in picking winners and losers?
It's a bubble here. I don't think any individuals knew anybody who may have voted for Trump, who was conservative, who went to church. These people were just self-contained and it was an echo chamber. And, you know, I've tracked a lot of their responses after these deep cuts and reforms that are taking place. And they still don't get it. You're right. There is this kind of we are saviors of the world. And what I try to do is to remind them, no, it's the American people. It's their money and it's their generosity that started the whole foreign aid business back during the Kennedy administration. There was a need to combat the Soviet Union at the time. But the way that we expressed our national security interests and the way that we do it today is to help people in need. And yeah, we were helping people during earthquakes, floods, and things like that. And it turned out to be a really effective tool to end the Cold War on our terms. But I got to tell you, starting a little bit with the Clinton administration, and then it really increased in the Obama administration, and then under Biden, it just went crazy to take this money and misuse it for purposes that the American people never accepted to. And it caused a lot of division over here. But you're right. They are a bubble and they don't realize the harm that they did. And, you know, my response to that is good riddance.
Yeah. So where do you think this ends? I mean, I don't think it ends with nine large European countries that that have reduced their funding and financing, and obviously the U.S. as well. I think there's more. I think you'll probably see Israel, because the WHO decided to get involved in that issue for whatever reason. It's not clear to me, but they're picking the winners and the losers, and they obviously have no desire to be apolitical.
Well, I think you're very astute in looking at the Europeans, because they too are cutting dramatically. I met with the Minister of Development of UK recently. They're cutting 40% of their aid budget. The French, 30%. The Germans cutting as well. Everybody's cutting simply because foreign aid has failed to alleviate poverty and meet the objectives that they themselves had put out. Instead, there's a recognition that if you want to alleviate poverty and strengthen these countries' ability to deal with poverty and these diseases and all, you've got to create wealth. Welfare doesn't do that, but the private sector does. And so this administration is moving away from these traditional modes. And you can see this in every peace agreement that the president does, commercial diplomacy, using the power of American capital to invest in these countries. We can't compete with China and their state-owned companies and state-owned banks, because we don't do that. But they cannot come close with our private sector. And we need to move forward on resolving and addressing poverty through what worked in Europe, what worked in other countries, what worked in here. And that's the private sector. That's what will generate the wealth, and we won't need foreign aid anymore.
The one of the Trump administration's officials said the following: communities on the ground love the United States and what we've done, but that is not translated into the leadership of those countries caring about the United States and what we've done, which I think goes directly to what you were saying, is that they taketh with one hand from us and they taketh from the Chinese with the other. And many of these countries are Marxist-led organizations that are aligning with the Chinese. So from a foreign policy perspective, it works contrary to our best interests. So we're much better off eliminating everyone in the middle and bringing direct aid to the ground.
Yeah, this notion that through foreign aid we're strengthening our alliances with these countries was completely wrong. There was no connection whatsoever. 19 of the top 20 recipients of foreign aid were already members of Communist China's Belt and Road Initiative. Three of the largest recipients of aid, South Africa, Mozambique, and Tanzania, actually engage in regular military exercises with the Communist Chinese Navy. It gets to that extent. So South Africa is a country where we should be cutting aid completely. They've been getting $600 to $800 million a year. They support Hamas. They support Iran. They support Russia. They support China. They never miss an opportunity to attack the United States at every time there's a UN vote. I think this administration, and I think it's just common sense, has said, well, we're going to look at your voting record. We want to establish a really good partnership with you. But if we're going to help you and then you turn around and then help Communist China, who is a very dangerous adversary of ours, then we can't have that partnership. And that is the correct way to pursue it.
You know, it's interesting. I tell folks all the time, we as a country, as politicians, we fear the consequence. We should embrace the consequence more so, and we need to consume political capital. That's what's happening here. And the Trump administration wasn't necessarily the leader. He had other European countries that were doing this before he decided to do so. But I think that's exactly what's going on now, is that people are, just as you recognize it, of what you just talked about in South Africa, embracing the consequences, just saying no. And no's a complete sentence.
Absolutely. And I think what you're going to see are a positive response from these countries. They're not going to take for granted the fact that this kind of help doesn't come free, nor should it. It's the money of the American taxpayer. All of us get part of our paychecks cut in order for the United States government to do things that are in our benefit. Hopefully most of it here at home, But, you know, sometimes, you know, overseas, and it's got to be justified, you know, preventing Ebola outbreaks or other outbreaks from reaching the United States. That protects the homeland. But when we go out there and spend our hard-earned money to help countries and these governments meet the social needs of their medical needs of their people, I think it's just common sense that we expect that there's going to be a friendship that evolves from it. But now that's no longer the case. And you're already seeing a lot of countries, you know, proving to be much more thankful and grateful for the support that we give. And I got to tell you also, these countries and governments that I talked to, they would always say, you know what? We prefer American investors to come over here rather than your NGOs. And that's where it needs to go. That's what they want. That's what works. And that's what this president is going to do. And I think if we can establish a kind of free market, business-oriented relationship, I think that that's going to translate in much closer political relationships.
That speaks volumes about the mess that we've created. I mean, we have to look ourselves in the mirror and take ownership of this, all of us, you know, because we've let this go on for decades.
Yep.
And it's only getting worse. It's time to disrupt it. Thank you so much for joining us, Max Primorac, Senior Research Fellow, Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage. Truly appreciate your time and your insight.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. There's a lot going on our coastline, and here to talk to us about it is James Karst, Communications Director for the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me back, Newell.
So let's talk about the Oyster Reef Bill. That is it, LUMCON?
Yeah, it is. This is the Louisiana University's Marine Consortium. It is down in Cocotree. And my organization is starting actually on Thursday. We're building an oyster reef there using shells that we collected from restaurants in New Orleans and Baton Rouge. We're building an oyster reef that's going to help slow the rate of land loss there. We're partnering with LUMCON and with the Grand Cayu Dulac Band of Biloxi Chittimacha Choctaw Tribe to put 200 tons of shell into the water.
200 tons. How long have y'all been collecting these shells?
Well, I tell you, the shell collection goes on year-round. You know, obviously, we're fortunate to have so many great restaurants and a great oyster industry here in Louisiana, so we do get a lot of shell, and we like to put as much of it back into the water as possible.
James, I know this has been proven to be very effective, right, the utilization of these shells.
Yeah, that's correct. We've measured a 50% reduction in the rate of land loss in places where we've built oyster reefs, which, you know, it's obviously not 100%, but when you're talking about the rate at which we are losing land, like, that's pretty significant. So it works really well. It also does other things. You know, it doesn't just slow land loss. It creates habitat for new oysters. New oysters like to attach to the old oyster shell. So you get more oysters out of it, which is brilliant, right? And
it's always a good thing.
Habitat for other things. Yeah, right. And other things, you know, things that feed off oysters. You get crabs hanging around there and birds. And so it's really a win-win, you know, on many levels.
When we look at like the CPRA and a lot of their projects, we don't hear a lot about what's going on, but there's still quite a bit of a lot of activity along the coastline, right?
Yeah, it's going on constantly. I think actually we're doing more projects than we've ever done before, and many different types of projects as well. So, you know, the CPRA really does great work. It's very coordinated. They can do, you know, large scale things. They can do big things. They can do big, expensive dredging projects and marsh creation projects and barrier island restoration. They're doing a tremendous amount of stuff. And they're also accepting input from people, from citizens like your listeners, about the type of projects that can be included in the next coastal master plan.
Yeah. Now, you guys are also involved in a volunteer event that you're doing on Grand Isle in November. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's right before Thanksgiving. We're actually recruiting volunteers now. This is a project in partnership with Jefferson Parish, and it's funded through the CPRA's Parish Matching Program. But we're going to be planting 25,000 plugs of dune grasses there on the beach side near the levee. And so it's going to, you know, you put the dune grasses in the sand, and when sand is being blown around by the wind, it hits the leaves of the grasses, it drops, and it begins to accumulate. And over time, that's going to create a dune there. And so it becomes a healthy, kind of thriving environment. So again, yeah, we're seeking volunteers to do that. It's going to be a lot of grasses we're planting there, and it's going to be great for the island.
How effective has that been? I mean, I know that, you know, throughout the Gulf Coast area, you see a lot of these projects in Florida, you know, with the creation of dunes and the utilization of dune grasses. And I'm kind of curious, is there some types of dune grasses that are more resilient to the Gulf Coast area than others?
Yeah, well, we plant specific kinds that are native here. So we're planting bitter panicum at Grand Isle. And, you know, the native species typically do the best because they've been here. You know, they're resistant to the things that cause other, you know, non-native species to not do so well. So that's the way we do it. I would say it's tremendously successful. It works. It does create dunes. It's obviously very low tech. You know, I mentioned how the state is able to do these big, you know, huge engineering projects and projects that require heavy machinery. And the stuff that we're doing is, I think, just as important. And many times it works in conjunction with these other types of projects. So, like, for instance, this place where we're planting these dune grasses, it's right next to the levee, right? Like, we can't go out there with 150 volunteers and build a levee, but we can plant these grasses that will support the levee. So it works very well. It's low tech. It's easy to do. And when you get a bunch of volunteers to come do it, you can really do a lot. So it's a great project, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
And basically what you're doing is saving what that big yellow equipment was doing, right? And creating, and you're planting grasses to save it.
That's right. You know, it doesn't always vegetate as quickly as would be ideal. So I always think back to a project I did when I first started at CRCL where the state, the CPRA, had created some marsh near Slidell that had been washed out by Hurricane Katrina. And they created this marsh, and it was wonderful, but it didn't have any vegetation in it. So, you know, if another storm had come across it, it just would have destroyed it again. So we went out there with volunteers. We took airboats out into the marsh, and we just planted grasses in the mud, you know, and that sends roots down through it, and it just gives it some structure and helps anchor it in place. And then, like I mentioned earlier, it creates habitat as well. So you begin to see the creatures that like to hang out there. So it works very well. It's a lot of fun. It's going to be a great week.
I think I last saw you at the off-bottom oyster event. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a great night. A lot of good oysters.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I've had plenty since then. But yeah. Any update on what's going on there?
Well, I think that that night was a huge event. I don't have the numbers before me right now, but we recycled a huge amount of shells. So I'm really grateful to our partners like Chef's Brigade and to the oyster farmers that came out and, of course, the restaurants. It was a great event, a great way of promoting the restaurants and promoting the oyster industry. And again, you know, getting that shell that we need to put back into the water. So it was really a wonderful event. I think it's going to become an annual thing, and I hope it continues to grow. Yeah, and you know, the oysters that we have here in Louisiana are really delicious. Like we're so fortunate to have world-class seafood down here, both traditional oysters and farmed oysters, and many other things on the menu as well. So we're lucky.
James, this is going to sound like a crazy question, but you're down there all the time. What's the state of the water right now?
The state of the water. I mean, I'm on the Mississippi River right now, so the water level is really low. It's really interesting. My office is right on the river here. It was really high in April, and it looked like it was about to overtop its banks. Of course, it wasn't. We had the levees that protect us from that, but it looks really low in the river right now. Elsewhere, I mean, it depends where you are. I think it's been warm, but I think it's starting to cool off. I think I'm not a meteorologist, but I think we've probably gotten through this hurricane season. So knock on wood.
Yeah. Yeah, I just did.
Yeah. Yep.
James, final thoughts?
I hope people will consider volunteering with us. We do some fun stuff, and you get to see, you know, interesting parts of Louisiana and feel like you're making a better future for it. So,
if you want to be hands-on, if you want to be hands-on, you want to be with James. James, if they have an interest, where would they go?
crcl.org or any of the social media platforms.
crcl.org. James Carrs, Communications Director for the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana. Thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great week.
Thank you, Noel.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk line. We have a few moments. Let's go to Brent. Brent, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Noel. I really appreciate you putting me on. The reason I was calling is that I just want you to know, especially, and the listening office, which I think a lot agree with me, that you deliver a message that's understandable, very clear, and I would say 99% of the words you come across with, people can understand. That 1% is probably words were never heard, okay? But you do such a good job of coming across the information with not only that you get from your staff, but also the people that are on your program. And that to me in radio is the bottom line, is what you deliver, your listeners understand it. And you do such a good job with it, okay? And I just wanted to pass that on to you because I met you the first time when you were sheriff. My folks lived in Grand Isle for 52 years, and I met you one time, and I'm almost sure it was for a rodeo, And I mean, you were down there for representing the sheriff's office, you know. But that was the first time I ever met you, and I never got to shake hands with you again. But anyway, that's what I got to say about you and your program, okay?
Well, Brett, thank you so much for calling in. That's very kind of you. You know, the thing I like the most about this job is, and I kind of kid about it and say that they pay me to read, and I always like, you know, the educational process and learning about things that typically I wouldn't read about, but I'm trying to bring forward subject matters that I think would be enjoyed by the listening audience, and that many in my listening audience have this same curiosity that I have about a lot of these issues. I mean, I have my opinions about things, and I'm trying to mix it in there, but I try to make it as educational as possible, because doing my research, I learned things and I have these aha moments that I've never experienced so many before. So it's been a lot of fun. You know, it's been 8 years already. It was 8 years, September 11th of this year, since I left the sheriff's office. And I've thoroughly enjoyed doing this. It is a challenge because the news cycles, I think there's like 24 of them in a day. It feels like it's changing every hour, and I feel like I'm double-checking my research to make sure that it is, in fact, still valid. I'm kind of intrigued by some members of the listening audience that they believe what they believe, and they're not going to be moved any which way. No matter how much information you bring forward. And, you know, and as I, for the most part, a lot of what I bring on are a lot of folks that I don't necessarily agree with their positions. I wish I could bring on more, but it's so hard to find people that want to come with a counter opinion on a more of a conservative bent talk show, right? And because I like listening to the other side. I really do. I learn a lot every time I do so. We can agree to disagree. You know, I enjoy talking to J.P. Morrell because I know where he is, and he's in a whole different place than I am, but I enjoy that. And we can debate a topic, debate an issue, and have a beer afterwards, and it's all good because it's all about respect. And you've heard me say this a million times. You can't believe that you're the center of any universe, for sure. They got some breaking news, you know, to pivot real quick. The president met with the folks from Australia the other day, and they signed what I think is a real important agreement relative to rare earth minerals. And between 2019 and 2022, the GAO comes out with a report that the U.S. imported more than 95% of rare earths. And recently, China engaged in a policy to restrict what they were going to send here, right? Well, these materials are absolutely critical and crucial in the manufacture of cars, utilized in your smartphones, drones, medical devices. It is uniquely important in high-tech weapons. And I was reading an article that just this morning, 800 pounds of rare earth minerals go into the making of the F-35 fighter jet. So it gives you an indication of why we better get on our game, and we better figure out how we're going to go about mining rare earth minerals here. You know, we have a lot of folks, the climate activists, talking about wanting to go EV, electric vehicles. Big time rare earth minerals necessary for those batteries and like. And it's like, where are we going to get it? One of the largest owners of rare earth minerals in the world, you got it, China. And that's where we have traditionally gone. But it looks like that supply chain is going to be modified, restricted, could be a little rocky. So we may have to engage in something that a lot of folks in this country are opposed to, mining. We'll be right back. We'll check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. Well, welcome back, folks. It looks like, for the most part, there's a little concern that we had relative to the NBA YoungBoy concert. Looks like it was adequately policed. There were enough security. We made it through two nights without having some of the same experiences that other cities had. I think Scoot joins us. Your thoughts, Scoot?
Yeah, well, you know, I think also a lot of credit goes to the crowd, the people who went there, yeah. You know, because if, you know, no matter how many police you have, if people want to cause trouble, they're going to cause trouble. And I think it was really a good reflection of our city that we were able to have that event without a problem. There was a false report of gunshots inside the Smoothie King Center. You know, I wonder if that came from outside, from somebody who wanted to give it a bad name. I don't know. I think yeah. They're still investigating that. But you can relate to all of the police that were out there and all of the assets that were out there, making sure that it was safe. And that was certainly a proactive move. So we'll talk a little bit about that. You know, we've talked about Brian Kelly recently, and, you know, the Tigers have not lit it up like everybody was expecting. But Brian Kelly's seat might not be as hot as some people think because of the price tag that it would take to pay him off. And these coaches get these big contracts, and win or lose, they're rich. We'll talk about that.
Pay me off and let me go crazy.
Yeah, I could go relax.
$52 million.
Yep.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.